Hi, Michael.
Hi.
All right, let's see. Christy Franco. Christiana.
I'm here.
Hi, I'm here.
Claire.
I'm here.
Jeff Wozniak.
Yes, I'm here.
Go on, Barhart. Scott Parnell.
I'm here.
Ken Jones. Dina Chambers.
I'm here.
Sarah Mattson here. Allison Noble. Mike Studdy. Tom Blanchard and Sandra Mooney.
I'm here.
The Tories.
I'm here.
Okay, Tom Donaldson, Kathy Mitchell.
I'm here.
James Reynolds.
Here.
Okay. Joe Wang.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Rajesh.
I'm here.
Miguel DeCampo. And Kirsty Donnell, I know, is on there. All right.
And you've got me, right?
I got you.
All right, thanks.
Good turnout for the people who could make it. So, Johan, Ken Jones, Mike Suddy.
Yep, I'm here. Hello.
Okay. Well, try to keep this meeting relatively short. As we had an issue last time with Kirsty Donnell's WebEx presentation. As you know, she's an affiliated scientist with CFAS, and we like to keep our affiliated scientists and find out what they're doing. So I'm going to ask her to do her presentation while I see it's on the screen and appears to be working. And
hooray!
And afterwards, we could go into the other announcements, etc. All right? But we'll get this one done. Why I know it's up and on and working. So, Kirsty, it's all yours, and I hope things are well, and thanks for staying up late tonight.
That's a pleasure. It's good to speak to you all again. Greetings from freezing Cape Town. We have managed to deal with our water crisis this winter, So we are still deep in the middle of winter here. So I'm going to talk today about the imaging study which CFAST awarded developmental money towards, got us started on imaging a group of children who we had imaged as neonates and which I have presented at various RSA meetings. So I'm going to just remind everybody about a little bit about the cohort and then talk to you about this two-year imaging time point, follow-up time point, which we completed towards the end of last year and have now just finished processing and getting all the data into usable form. So, and then to give you just a kind of sneak preview of our preliminary analysis of that group, and then a little reminder of what we found in the neonatal age group, and then wrap it up. So, the study overall is based in Cape Town. This is where I work at the Red Cross Children's Hospital, which is in Cape Town. Not too many blue skies at the moment, but in summer it looks very pretty. This is the Children's Hospital, which is the only standalone children's hospital in sub-Saharan Africa at the moment, and where we see many children who've got developmental disabilities of various descriptions. So the background, as you know, is that our prevalence of fetal alcohol spectrum disorders is really very high in this region as a result of a number of social and political factors over many, many years. And we have, we as well as a number of other groups have used MRI to help start understanding the effects of prenatal alcohol exposure on brain development in the context of high-risk environments such as South Africa. And globally, they have consistently identified overall brain volume reductions resulting in both total gray and white matter volume reductions in children exposed to alcohol in utero compared to healthy controls, and this seems to be true of both children growing up in environments which have other psychosocial risks as well as higher resource environments. Right, now why is this not carrying on? Right, so our previous findings in the neonatal group suggested that the effects of prenatal alcohol exposure on gray matter is evident as early as during the neonatal period. So we found differences in overall gray matter volume, as well as in even taking the overall gray matter volume into account, that the deep gray matter, which I'll come back to in detail a little bit later, was differentially affected in these very young infants. And we felt that it was important to look at how this played out over these first few years of life during a period when there is really quite massive brain growth in terms of volume, as well as changes in maturity and network creation over the early years. So this was the aim of this follow-up group. And as a result, we imaged 180 2 to 3 year olds as part of this follow-up study. So the study location is a birth cohort, which consists of approximately 1,000 mother-infant pairs. And the community is a relatively stable community, which uses largely public health facilities. And so recruitment occurred in those facilities to maximize retention. And the communities were mixed between one which was largely Cape Coloured community or people of mixed ancestry, and the other community was predominantly of Black African ancestry, and all births occurred in a public hospital. So we've had relatively strong retention and follow-up within the community. Our oldest kids in this cohort now are 6 years of age. For the imaging components, we brought children through to Cape Town itself, which is about an hour's drive, to Cubic, which is near Groote Hospital, which is in Cape Town proper. We gave children a warm meal, so they're toddlers. We gave them a warm meal and put them on their mum's backs. We wrapped them in blankets and kept them in a dimly lit room. And once they were deeply asleep, we positioned them in the scan and fitted them with earplugs and then went ahead with the scan. So this is what the scanner looks like in our environment. This is one of our research assistants, and you can see that we've really made an effort to make the scanner look as approachable as possible. And less intimidating, although for many of these kids, they grow up in rural environments, and so anything that looks anything remotely like a hospital is a fairly scary environment. So the quality of the people who actually do the scanning is really very critical. This little girl is our poster girl. She was fantastically cooperative, and she in fact, didn't go to sleep on her mum's back. She went into the scanner awake and lay still, and we got a scan on her. But that is extremely unusual for 2 to 3 year olds, who, as anybody knows, 2 to 3 year olds. But amazingly, we had really good success. We got a good system going. We tended to scan in the evenings, and later on, as we gained confidence, we also scanned in the early afternoon. So this is kind of typical time when kids would normally have a nap or go to sleep. And we had a really quite high success rate ultimately. So we, as in the neonates, we collected data on 4 modalities, including structural MRI with T1 and T2 sequences, diffusion tensor imaging, magnetic resonance spectroscopy in the parietal gray and white matter, and resting state functional connectivity. So we used fairly standard processing software, which was far less problematic in 2 year olds than it was in the neonatal age group. But it did an element of quality control on the manual quality control, certainly on the structural images ahead of time. So our final sample, we had just over 200 children go through the scanner. Of those, we had 181 in whom we had usable scans. And for this analysis, we included just over 160. We excluded some children who had known additional substance use from this analysis. So children who had prenatal methamphetamine use, we didn't include in this analysis. And we looked at outputs in particular for subcortical volumes, cortical thickness and cortical surface area for regions of interest. And also correlated this with the developmental assessments assessed using the Bayley scales of infant development at the 2 year age point as well. So interestingly, we found that, so this is really a preliminary analysis, and I expect we're going to, you know, it's going to be look more nuanced when we go into it in more detail, but the preliminary analysis really showed quite marked differences in the way the deep gray matter looks for boys and girls in the alcohol exposed and the control groups. And in particular, the putamen volume seems to have quite a significant interaction effect between gender or infant sex and volumes, which is interesting and slightly surprising, the extent of it. The Bayley scales, the subscales which correlated most closely with the brain volumes appeared to be the motor scales. So the gross motor scales in particular, but also the fine motor scale scores. And that is consistent with what we found looking just at the developmental scores across the whole cohort. So when we looked at just the Bayleys in all 800 kids that had the Bayleys, it was the motor scores which came up as being affected in our cohort at age 2. So it's reassuring in a way that it is the motor scores that come up as being relevant when it comes to the imaging findings, and that's obviously reassuring to find. We also looked at cortical thickness and cortical surface areas, and particularly in the frontal and parietal regions, because those obviously are the areas which are typically most prominently affected in alcohol exposure and in prenatal alcohol exposure, and found a number of regions which appear to be different between the groups. And we'll look into that in a little bit more detail. This is a reminder of what we found in the infant, again, with a degree of specific detail. And just to remind you that not only did we find the differences in the deep gray in the infants, as we have done with the two-year-olds, although the distribution is slightly different, but we found differences in the in DTIs in the major tracts connecting the temporal and parietal regions, and we'll be looking at that and the structural connectivity using data from the structural and the DTI output at the next stage. So really, the conclusions are only preliminary at this stage because this is a first pass look at our data. But it's interesting to find that there's consistency with findings in adolescent research in prenatal alcohol exposure. So even at this really early age, it does appear that the brain regions are manifestly different. And that cortical thickness and cortical surface area, and particularly in the parietal and frontal regions, seem to be targeted even in this early early time, even before the main kind of frontal activities and embedding developmental effects are really coming into force. So it's interesting that's occurring. This is just a little reminder of the environment that many of the children are growing up in. They have significant socioeconomic risk, and any research that we do really needs to be looking at factors which may also affect child development outside of the alcohol exposure. And so this cohort is really beautifully and deeply characterized in that respect, with mental health measures, other substance use measures, both on biological specimens as well as questionnaire-based. And in fact, child exposure to violence, which is another area that we're interested in looking at. So there's a lot to be done. This is really just a little taste of what we're doing and what was started with the CFAS developmental grant. We have an R01 at the moment, which is allowing us to do a follow-up, a third time point of age 6, just before the children enter formal schooling. And we're about a third of the way through getting data on that age point. This is a reminder of all the children that go into a study such as this. It's really quite an amazing cohort, and very committed mums and children over time. Thank you to all the people who've been involved, and of course the children. And that's me.
Well, Chrissy, thank you very much. You've done quite a bit with the startup funds that were made available through CFAS. It's good to see this work continuing on such a scale. And I have a naive type of question. You're finding these sex differences, which have certainly been found before, and I'm wondering if the areas where you find these are normally sexually dimorphic brain areas?
Well, they are. I mean, if we go back to that slide, you can see that the children who are who are not exposed are also, nothing's pressed on my screen. The children, the control children, the children who are not exposed to alcohol are also have differences between boys and girls, but they are not as marked. So it seems to, and they're on the other direction.
Right, and so what about, I mean, you found sex effects in other brain areas besides hippotamus?
I'm gonna have to say hold that question because we've only just finished processing all these scans and doing quality control, so this was really a first pass analysis that I did specifically for this presentation. So we really haven't had a chance to go into it in a huge amount of depth beyond this, but it is absolutely something that we need to look at. It was, you know, when we in the neonates, it was not as clear the differences between the boys and girls, except for in the more kind of functional modality. So the MRS seemed to be quite different between boys and girls, but it's absolutely something that we need to look at in our developmental data. We have seen strong interaction effects of gender on developmental outcomes at age 2. And that paper's just, it's in press at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in our kind of, our more extensive analysis of the data.
Okay. Any other questions?
Kirstie, this is Jeff. I have a quick question. When you're doing these volumetric analyses, like the subcortical one we're looking at here, are you controlling for head size for this one specifically?
For intracranial volume, not for head circumference.
Okay, so that obviously would be correlated.
Yeah.
And then a quick second question. I might have missed this. I think you had a slide on the thickness. Were you finding thicker cortices or thinner cortices in the alcohol-exposed group?
It's thinner.
Thinner, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
But this often changes with time. Sometimes things are unexpected at this early age group, I guess, but predominantly we found thinner.
Right. Yeah, I would agree that this is something that we're kind of seeing across different papers where there are some differences, and it really depends when you look developmentally, whether you're going to see a thinner cortex or thicker.
Which is why we're trying to do it over time in the same children to see if we can see how it plays out in terms of a trajectory rather than just at single time point.
Right. And we're also doing that with a 15-month gap in the 10 to 16-year-old. So we'll have that from both ends.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing that data.
Likewise.
Right.
Any other?
I've got a quick question. Will you be imaging these same children in the R1 follow-up?
Yes, that is what we are doing.
Okay.
We've imaged about 80 so far at age 6, the same children, as have had this time, the 2 to 3 year time point and the neonatal time point.
Anything else?
Can I just have one quick question? Mike Duffy. Just wondering if you've looked at any polysubstances or drug use as well in addition to the alcohol, or is that an exclusion criteria for the alcohol exposure?
So we've got biological measures of smoking exposure. We have urine cotinine, antenatal urine cotinine on the mums, which gives us a very robust measure of of nicotine exposure. So those that, you know, the active moms versus the, you know, versus passive smokers versus non-exposed. There is also urine screening for other substances. The big one in our region is methamphetamine. And so we've taken out the kids that where the mums were positive. From this analysis anyway, we've taken out the kids where mums were positive for other drugs of abuse. There are problems, you know, there are limitations to those screens as well. If the mums hadn't been using for a few days, it would probably be out of her system. And, you know, if she then doesn't admit to it on the questionnaire as well, then she may, the child may still be exposed to other substances and we just wouldn't know about it. So, that's a limitation. But we've done our best to try and exclude it. With the exception of the smoking, obviously we take that into account in our analysis because the smoking seems to actually have quite a big effect, additional effect, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
we take something similar in the face as well.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you again, and we can move on to a few agenda items. We don't have that many, so it should go pretty quick. But thank you, Kirsty. Is Tatiana on? All right, Tatiana was got a conflict with this conference call just shortly before it began. And so she said she might try to get on later, but she did send away, send to me anyway, two announcements. The recruitment for the DIG FASD study, she believes, is going slow. And so she wants to try to work with CFAS sites that are doing human work to obtain saliva from the participants they're seeking. You have to remember that they do pay the participants for their involvement. They are also currently working with Google to pilot ads for the study as well. And NOFAS has been a great partner in their outreaching to other groups now to see if they can help with the recruitment. So if you have any ideas about how to enhance the recruitment for the genetic study that Tatiana's doing, please let her know, and if you can help her out, that would be great as well. Leah also, she's on vacation this week, but she's been making progress on the central repository. There's now data dictionaries on all the projects and initial data from almost all of those projects. They're trying to connect these data dictionaries from the various projects that have been submitted, and they're working on modifying the data sharing plan. So progress is coming along, and hopefully by the time we meet in October, all of this is resolved and go from there. And Jill is coming in to tell me I said something wrong. But I'm going to get to that.
Well, I mean, it's all within what
we're doing. Oh. All right. Jill had interrupted in this. But so they're modifying the data sharing page on the CFAS website to better facilitate access from outside investigators. They're going to be soliciting feedback from all of the investigators through a separate conference call or by, that's from Jen Thomas and IU team. The other thing we need to discuss is the face-to-face meeting. That's going to be held October 28th, and I would assume that on the 29th that we will be finished somewhere around 1 o'clock. So if you need to book airfare, please don't book anything before 3 o'clock on the way back. I know that some of you will be staying in D.C., and that's great, but you can start booking your airfare. And we're going to be staying at the Bethesda Marriott Suites, and Jill will be sending out how to make your reservations there. We have rooms held, so that's not a problem. For that meeting, given the fact that we have simply a one day and then a short second day, it's going to be in Washington, D.C., and we are hoping to have Dr. Koob there for at least part of the meeting. So I would start preparing your presentation, which would be probably less than 10 minutes long. We haven't worked out the agenda yet. I don't believe we're going to invite any outside speakers to this meeting because of the time frame. And but I'm assuming about 10 minutes to present your latest findings. And again, you don't need the details of what you were proposing, kind of just what you found again and the highlights of what's been accomplished in the last year or maybe 2 years. Bill, you have any other input onto that?
No, I think that's good. I think at some point, Ed, perhaps you'll give a overview to help orient Dr. Koob. George will be there for pretty much the entire meeting. At least that's what he's told me. So, you know, this is our opportunity as a consortium to really highlight our accomplishments So keep that in mind when you're putting your talks together.
And for those who don't know Dr. Koob, he does not have any hesitancy in exactly how he feels about something. So if you do good, he'll let you know, and if he's not pleased with it, he'll also probably let you know. So now I also want to remind that there are, in the room we are going to be meeting at, there's very, very limited space, 3 people maximum. And so please try not to invite people to come with you to this meeting because they probably won't be able to get in the room. So it should be PIs and individuals who are multiple PIs. But other people are going to have to be left at home for this meeting, given the space allocation that we have. So I would start preparing your presentation so that they all look nice and everything is great. Are there any questions about that?
Ed, I just wondered if those presentations or at least summary of the progress is going to be distributed to the advisory group before then, or will we just see it at the meeting as well?
Normally, the progress reports are sent out to the SAB prior to the January meeting. And this meeting we're just doing because we have the opportunity to present Dr. Koob, and we're going to meet.
Oh, you've made me very happy. You had me at no. That's perfect. Yeah.
So I would like to see probably the presentations that people are going to give beforehand. We'll be sending out emails about that. What do you think, Bill? It could be good to have people write up a one-page summary for Dr. Koob to see, for the SAB and Dr. Koob to see prior to the meeting.
Yeah, let me think about that. That might not be a bad idea because we could put that together in terms of a briefing book, perhaps for him. I would definitely want to see the slides before everyone gets here. Let's think about that. I mean, Ed, another reason we're having this meeting, and it's something we can discuss, but, you know, the last couple of years, we've some subset of CFAS investigators have met at RSA, and we did not do that this year. In the future, you know, it may be that we have this second meeting as a remote meeting. We toyed around with that idea a couple years ago. So it's something to consider so that we don't necessarily have two face-to-face meetings.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think we're down to the one face-to-face, and you know, we have our little associated meetings like we did in Vancouver, et cetera. But I mean, the big face-to-face do once a year, and then we could do another WebEx for the second wire.
Ed, are you expecting the pilot project?
Yes.
Okay.
Although I will have to talk to people about that because I don't know what's going on with the UH2s
right.
and moving forward. So, but my aim right now is, yes, to include them.
Okay.
All right. Now, any other questions about the annual meeting space? All right. Our conference call for September, a number of people have to miss because it conflicts with the ESPR meeting. And Mike Charnas put together a symposium which for CFAS, and so there are going to be five people from CFAS that I know are going to the meeting because they're presenting. So Jill's going to send out a doodle poll to try to move that meeting up a week or back a week, one of them. We'll try to see what we see how that works out for everybody. If not, we'll just have to maybe cancel it and then just try to get together at the face-to-face meeting. Now, are there any progress updates that people would like to give? Anyone making exciting headway? Okay. Any comments by the SAB?
I've already given mine, and I'm always very succinct, so I'm done.
It took a long time to say I'm done.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael.
No, Ed, apologies for missing the last couple of meetings, but I don't have anything to add right now.
And I mean, our meetings have been relatively short. You know, we're missing people due to vacation schedules. Hopefully we'll get back on track after our face-to-face meeting and get seeing where projects are going and how they're interacting and discuss those on the conference call. Jill just put up the publication policy progress, concept proposals, manuscript submissions. Hopefully people will continue to use these to let everybody at CFAS know what they're doing and what their publication plans are. Am I forgetting anything else? Okay, then Bill, Joe, any comments, suggestions, anything?
Nothing official. I think... you know, we should really be thinking about this October meeting. I think it'll be really important to make a good impression for Dr. Kube. You know, as you think about putting your talks together, you know, I'd say please put some effort into it because if we can show that the consortium's making good progress, that will help in any kind of future thoughts of renewing the consortium. So, no pressure, but I think it'd be a good time to highlight the network or the consortium.
I would say it's extremely important. for projects to come and put their best foot forward in an honest, straightforward way. And I'll work on the timing to see whether or not we can give you a little bit more time, because Dr. Kube may not be familiar with all of the projects. And
right.
My overview will not touch on each individual project and what it's trying to accomplish. So, you know, when I said get to the heart of the matter of what you found, we'll start trying to put an agenda together to see, so you have a little bit more time to say what your aims were and what you've accomplished. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Bill, I was just wondering the extent to which at least the synergy and how these data are being shared across should be noted. I mean, particularly in terms of the repository, but also the kinds of things that some of these investigators have been doing together and hopefully are expanding in this new 4 version, as well as perhaps innovative turns it is taking.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely highlight innovation. If there's any way to highlight translational potential for the projects, but I think you were asking maybe the synergy with other consortia
amongst themselves. No, amongst themselves. In terms of, one of the things that I've heard from George periodically is that he's interested in innovation. He wants things to fit together. He's looking for how money and investment is coming together for a greater good, those sorts of things, rather than individual pieces per se. I mean, the individual pieces are important, but it's how they come together.
Anytime we can highlight why this needs to be a collection of cooperative agreements and not just scattered R01 applications, that's in our best interest. And I think, I think that we've got enough stories that we can point to do that, but we just have to do it in a clear fashion. So, yeah, I think that's a good idea.
All right. Any other comments by anybody? Then we will arrange another call prior to this October meeting, and I will try to get an email out within the next week or two about a preliminary agenda time so you can start preparing the slides. All right.
This is Jill. I just want to let you know, too, the week before, we also have a call. So we have a call the Wednesday before the Monday of the meeting to do any final tweaks in addition to the September call, whenever that is going to be.
Okay. The hotel announcement, Jill will send that out shortly, but airfares, you can start getting to come in on Sunday, start probably 8 or 9, Monday, 8:30 Monday morning. Finished by 1 o'clock on Tuesday. All right. All right, everybody have a good week and nice Labor Day weekend, and we will all be in touch.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.